What number is this, Chip?
Episode 23. What makes a perfect monkeys episode, and what could have happened in a third season?
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
And welcome to episode 23 of Zilch. And I'm joined by a very special, lovely lady, the lovely, the amazing Jody Blau-Ritson. Hi, Jody.
Hi, Ken. Congratulations on episode 23.
Glad to be here, and it's nice to monkey around with you today. So, you've been driving monkeydom crazy. Is that a word, monkeydom?
I think you just coined it.
So, Jody, tell us all about Michael Nesmith at Chiller Theater.
Chiller Theater, which is in Parsippany, New Jersey. They have Chiller Theater twice a year. They get about 80 celebrities at their events. Mm-hmm. And this coming April, the 24th to the 26th, I have the amazing pleasure of assisting Papa Nez in signing autographs and taking pictures for the first time ever at a convention like this. Obviously, the Monkees convention was his first outing, but this is the first convention outside of that Nez has ever agreed to. So he is coming back to New Jersey in a couple of months. He's going to be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday meeting with all the fans for Chiller's 25th anniversary of their start in this amazing adventure that they have given everybody in coming up in close with all of their childhood heroes. I'm so excited because I get to be with him for 3 full days. And that is number one. That is the first for 2015.
If you're a Nez head, this is for you.
If you are a Nez head, this is definitely where you want to be, and in Parsippany, New Jersey. And it's only a couple miles away from where we normally do the Monkees convention. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the same area. I would book your room, everything, because this sells out really quickly. They get about 30,000 people there. So I'm just so excited and honored and so happy that the fans are going to have another opportunity, or for many of them, the first opportunity to be able to meet and greet Papa Nez.
Well, this is very cool news. Thank you for being on Zilch.
I'm so excited. Thank you. And I can't wait to hear episode number 24.
Oh, all right. It's always great to have Jody stop by with some great news for Monkees fans. And it's going to be a busy time, a busy season for Monkees fans. Mickey and Peter have announced 3 concert dates in the coming months, March 27th in Indio, California, April 24th and 25th in Orillia, Ontario. So the same time that Nez is in Parsippany, New Jersey, Mickey and Peter will be up in Ontario. Andrew Sandoval will be producing these shows for Mickey and Peter with new visuals and an acoustic section. So this should be really cool for Monkee fans. And in great news, on January 26, Orchestra Kentucky gave the debut performance of Peter's piano concerto, Moderato Monantropo, which in English, as Melanie Mitchell points out, is moderate but not too much. The next evening, Peter Tork was honored for the 2014 Orchestra Kentucky Lifetime Achievement in the Arts and Humanities Award. So that's pretty cool. Congratulations to Peter Tork. And Mickey Dolenz will be part of something called Sketchfest 2015. He will be part of something called Celebrity Autobiography. The 2015 edition will also feature John Cho, Janine Garofalo, Debbie Harry, and several other people. So check that out. It's always great to see the Monkee guys out on the road doing some very cool things. And now, on with the rest of the show. And welcome to this special episode of Zilch, where 3 friends are just going to sit around and talk about what they love about the Monkees and possibly what could have happened in a third season. We're going to talk about our favorite tropes and plot devices. We're going to talk about characters that we would have liked to have seen return, and maybe what songs could have been used in the show. Let me introduce the panelists. I, of course, am Ken, the guy you're stuck with all the time. And we are joined on my left by the charming and delightful Melanie Mitchell.
Hi, Ken.
How are you? Welcome back.
I'm so glad to be here.
Excellent. I'm glad to be anywhere. And also on my other left is the charming and delightful Megan Stem-Wade.
Hey, Ken. Hey, Melanie.
Hi, Megan.
Glad to have you back on the show.
And, oh, thanks for having me.
This is going to be fun. I love talking monkeys. What did you think about the difference in quality from the first season to the second season? And we'll start with Melanie. We'll throw that little question out there.
Oh, it's so interesting that you put it that way, because I've actually been thinking about the development of the show and how it changed. And I actually think that, for me, the highlights are at the very beginning and at the very end. I really like the really early season one episodes where everything is kind of innocent and sweet. And I really like the final season two episodes where they're really self-referential and sarcastic. Uh-huh. So that's what I see.
Megan, same question. Your thoughts?
I agree with Melanie. I think it's really interesting how much the show changes. And, you know, I think it goes from being kind of a straight sitcom, more or less, into uh-huh. something that starts evolving, and you start to see the monkeys, their personalities coming out. You start to see how much they're involved with, you know, things behind the scenes and bringing on people like Tim Buckley. And I think, you know, season three would have been really interesting.
By the way, does anybody else here, like, have a problem with Tim Buckley? I mean, not the performance or the artist himself, but it just seems like, what a weird way for the last bit that you see of the monkeys. This is it, Tim Buckley. It was just kind of weird.
You know, I felt that way as a kid when I saw the show. I would always skip it. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, knowing more about Tim Buckley and his son too, Jeff Buckley, and I find it so bittersweet now. Mm-hmm. And I think that song is beautiful, and that performance is probably one of the best of that particular song, Song to the Siren. But it is odd. I mean, you just sort of left like, that's the end of the show forever. Yeah.
I remember watching the marathons and like not being able to fast forward it because it was happening. And just like going, oh, I remember this. This goes on forever, you know. Melanie, any thoughts from you on that one?
It's a pretty song, mm-hmm. but the sequence really doesn't do anything for me. I see kind of where they were going in that sort of variety show, Sonny and Cher, Carol Burnett kind of way, mm-hmm. where some things were funny and some things were informative, and this was just beautiful. And it was beautiful, but it didn't really do anything for me. Mm-hmm. I will point out that it may have been the last thing aired. It was not the last thing. That particular episode, Meet Yokoja, was not the last episode filmed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I do believe they did all three of those guest appearances at the very end of December because of the way people are wearing the same costumes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you can see Tim Buckley standing in front of the car that was wrecked by Frank Zappa.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Davey got,
I don't know if they knew ahead of time where they were going to be used.
Right. Mm. Why did Peter get the short end of the stick as far as picking a guest star?
I've heard different answers to who he had in mind. Mm-hmm. I've heard him say that he wanted to have Pete Seeger.
Oh, wow. That would have been awesome.
And
oh, man.
There was somebody else that he wanted to have. It might have been Janis Joplin. Mm. I'm not sure. I'd have to double check on that one. We may need to
Ooh, mind blown. That.
You're starting to get thought balloons.
And this is the third dimension, which is normal. Mm-hmm. Well, monkey's normal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, right.
Peter was not in a very productive phase of his life at that point.
It
may just have been he couldn't get it lined up, or mm-hmm. maybe the time just ran out and they couldn't line it up. I don't know.
Was this around the time of Ladies' Baby?
Yeah.
Wow, what a trip. All right, let's talk about our favorite tropes or plot devices. And I believe I'm using that word properly, a trope. I'm trying to be hip and with it like you guys. But here are my five tropes, and feel free to discuss them as you wish. But the number one, the one thing I love about the monkeys is I love it whenever they do a spooky or a monster-centric episode.
I want to drink your blood.
That's not at all nice to say.
I want to sip your blood.
Much better.
Anything that could air during a Halloween marathon works for me.
Let's see, there were two and a half that sort of fell into that category. They were good episodes.
Well, there was the, plus anything like with the hauntings, like there's the one where the people just show up weirdly and while they're all trying to get to sleep and they try to do the seance and things like that.
A coffin too frequent?
Yes, oh, a coffin
yeah.
too
okay,
frequent.
Okay, that'll definitely be in that category too. I was thinking of Monkey See, Monkey Die with the monster that's supposedly haunting the mansion as being mm-hmm. the half. And then add on to that, you've got the teenage monster, mm-hmm. Monstrous Monkey Mash, and Coffin Too Frequent mm-hmm. is definitely.
And of course, Davey wanted the sequel so he could make out with the blonde chick
right,
that's in
right.
the closet.
That was a delightful little bit that was put into I Was a Teenage Monster.
Excellent.
Doctor's Beautiful Daughter, yes.
Works for me. Number two, I also liked it any time the monkeys help someone. For example, they try to help the old toy maker.
Mm-hmm.
Things along mm-hmm. those lines.
I would point out that I sort of classify monkeys episodes generally falling into one of three plot categories. Either they're helping somebody else, they're trying to get themselves out of danger, or their feelings have been hurt and they're trying to overcome the whatever it is that has offended them or hurt their feelings. I think of the three, helping somebody else are my favorite category.
Wow, that's cool. See, this is why she's the book writer.
That's right.
Megan, any thoughts on the monkeys helping people?
I think those are always lovely episodes because we get to see a little more of the world around them. Like in Monkey Mayor, when they're trying to, help their neighbors fight the encroachment of the parking lots. Of course, they're also trying to get the neighbors out of their house. But it's touching to see, you know, how they take up for all the people in the neighborhood.
Very cool.
I'll also point out there are some episodes where they start out in danger, but the way they solve their problem is by helping somebody. And that's really kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm.
A good example of that would be Hillbilly Honeymoon, where it starts out with everybody waving guns around and threatening them. But in the end, the way to solve everyone's problem was by to help the two people fall in love and get married.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's a good one.
And teach them proper dental care.
And how to use a knife and a fork.
Exactly. And not spit all over the place.
Well, I don't care who it is. Ellie Mae's got to get married because tomorrow she'll be 16 years old and I don't want nobody calling her old maid.
My third trope is the monkeys fall in love / lust. I think that's one we see a lot. Anytime there are stars in someone's eyes.
Are you an artist?
Do fish swim?
Do you like chamber music?
Do fish swim?
Hey, do you dance ballet?
Do fish swim?
Oh, Mike, you ride a bike.
That's right, baby. And fish can swim. Watch this.
That pretty much falls underneath this. Megan, what are your thoughts on episodes?
Well, I mean, again, referencing myself as a 12-year-old, those were definitely my favorites, especially when Davey had the stars in his eyes. Those are good episodes. As a matter of fact, I used Some Like It Lukewarm, the scene when he meets Deanna Martin. Gets the stars in his eyes. I took that into class because I had to do a presentation. It was like a poetry unit, and I was reading love poems, and I started off with that scene. So that was a big hit mm-hmm. in 11th grade.
I'm so glad you didn't use the poetry between Davy and the princess in Everywhere Shake Shake.
Oh,
you have beautiful eyes. You have beautiful eyes.
I think I would have been
better. I love your nose.
That's some bad.
Ken, how do you feel about episodes where Mike falls in love?
Did he? I remember he...
April Conquest.
Yeah, he made out with a few people.
Monkeys on the Line. Yeah. He kind of falls for the actress on the other end of the answering service.
And there was one of the harem girls in Everywhere Shake Shake.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
it was kind of awkward. They avoided it for the most part, but every now and then they'd...
avoided it for what reason?
Because he was married. And all the kids who were watching knew that Mike was married.
Right. And it was kind of weird. Whenever I think of something like that, I think about when the Beatles appeared on Ed Sullivan for the first time. And they put something on the screen like, Paul McCartney, Ringo, George. And then they go to John and it says, sorry, girls, he's married or something like that. But it was kind of weird that, they never tried to hide that. As a matter of fact, it was referenced several times in the show.
Officially once in Fairy Tale, sort of semi-officially in Hillbilly Honeymoon.
Mm-hmm. When very true.
She says, I love you. And she says, I think you're cute. And he says, so do my wife and kids.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Do you guys remember seeing the stars in anything prior to this? I mean, I'm sure they must have been used in all of Hollywooddom, right?
Stars in the eyes?
Yeah.
Probably in cartoons.
Yeah. And the monkeys basically.
I would say cartoons, maybe. I think that's one thing that's so innovative about the show, too, is this combination of different kinds of visual trickery and of course, the monkey magic, which is why, Melanie's here, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't think of anything where, live action use those kinds of starry eyes.
It's very cool.
I'm not an expert on film technology, but we're so used to the Who Framed Roger Rabbit combination of live action and animation. Back then, it must have taken, some effort to put stars in somebody's eyes.
Yeah.
I know it's hard for me. I try all the time, but it doesn't always work. But I do. One does what one can.
Flaming balls of hydrogen gas.
And number four for me is the monkeys stick it to authority, which happened all the time. And I think it was kind of empowering for the youth of the time. I know that was something that counterculture was trying to put into, everywhere. It was trying to push that message everywhere. But when you think about it, parents were just fine and dandy with their kids watching these nice boys with long hair. Is there any examples that you can cite off the top of your head, Melanie, about the monkeys usurping authority?
I'm trying to think. Usually when they were dealing with government authorities, it was a case of them being respectfully cooperative, but the government authorities being totally incompetent.
Right.
policemen and politicians, that sort of thing. And as far as what you said about parents letting their kids watch the long-haired rock and rollers, I think that's basically goes back to what you said is number one, and that is that they were helping people.
Yeah,
they kept showing them being helpful and polite, and so even though they had long hair and sang rock and roll, they were being shown to be really, really nice people, and that was helpful. But as far as usurping authority, I think that usually came when they were up against somebody who was patently evil, mm-hmm. an evil duke or an evil prince or whatever to mm-hmm. that had to be defeated.
Or in the example of the monkeys versus machine, there's the two different things, even though they seem to be working together. There's the actual computer itself, and then there's the guy who's running the toy factory. It's that's kind of cool. Megan, any thoughts along these lines?
I agree with Melanie, and I think, it's even in the theme song, they're too busy singing to put anybody down. So mm-hmm. I think that they entered the market, the, burgeoning teenage market in the 60s as, wholesome, fun, crazy guys. And I think it's kind of cool they were able to take the kids on a ride where in the second season it's getting to be a little more counterculture.
Don't now. Now, really, everybody cool it because I won't be able to get through this.
Action.
Hey, wow. It's a groovy button. What does it say?
Love is the ultimate trip.
Oh, gee, that's a nice thought.
Gee, that's a neat button. What does it say?
Let's go again.
Hey, that's a groovy button. What does it say?
Love is the ultimate trip.
That's a nice thought.
That's a nice button. What is...
Let's go again.
Oh, wow. That's a groovy button. What does it say?
It says love is the ultimate trip.
Oh, that's a nice thought.
That's a nice button. What does it say?
Save the Texans.
Let's go again.
Hey, that's a groovy button. What does it say?
Love is the ultimate trip.
That's a nice thought.
That's a nice button. What does it say?
Save the Texas button.
Let's go again.
Hey, what is it? Hey, that's a nice button. What does it say?
Love is the ultimate trip.
Oh, that's a groovy thought.
That's a nice button. What does it say?
Save the Texas Hold it.
Let's go again.
Hey, that's a groovy button. What does it say?
Love is the ultimate trip.
Oh, that's a nice thought.
That's a groovy button. What does it say?
Save the Texas Prairie Chicken.
And my number five trope is the monkeys basically are broke, or as I put it, the monkeys cash a check and lose it. It seemed like whenever they'd get some money that would come into their hands, it would instantly disappear. So I know that Mickey always talks about how that was one of the charms of the show, is that they never made it.
That's true.
I would say that was an essential charm to the show.
Right.
But it's strange.
I always think of that bittersweet moment in Monkey Mother when Millie is asking Mike what she could make for him, and he says, make me a success. You know, that's a sweet moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a little song here. But, you know, it's strange. Mickey says that the monkeys never made it, and I had the misfortune of watching the Monkeys Wild Race? Which episode is that, Melanie?
Monkeys Race Again?
Yes, the Monkeys Race Again. Yikes, what a horrible episode. I remember...
The Auto Racing Nazis episode.
Yeah, that is such a weird episode, because you've got these Nazis running around, and I remember Craig and Jeff talking about the Nazi Star Trek episode, and how shocked that they were that, I mean, it had only been like, you know, less than 20 years or whatever that we were dealing with this, and that was all defeated. And here they're being played for a joke, you know. Same with Hogan's Heroes. It was a very strange thing. But that whole episode is weird. If they're so broke, how do they have this car, and how can they just bop over to England?
But actually, Ken, I think the episode is set in Los Angeles. Both teams
really?
Came to L.A. to race.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Well, smack me in the forehead.
I'm going to share a personal story about... Mm-hmm. That whole, you know, it was only a few years later and we're making jokes about the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Probably right around 1970, 71, I was on a family vacation at the beach, and I met a girl who was from Germany.
Ah.
And I was, that would make me about 8 or 9 years old. And we were the kind of temporary friends that you have at a, you know, vacation spot. You're not, you know, you're just spending time together while you're there at the same place.
Mm-hmm.
But I told her that I really loved the show Hogan's Heroes. So I told her about this TV show that I really loved, because it was the only thing I knew about Germany was Hogan's Heroes.
Hmm.
I didn't know the context. To me, Hogan's Heroes was funny. It was, you know, happy-go-lucky what fun it is to be in Stalag 13.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only afterwards, when my father really chewed me out and told me how much I'd hurt this girl's feelings by bringing up World War II, that I didn't know enough about it to understand what I had done.
Wow. That's heavy. But it was so weird, because it seems like around that same time, there were many shows that dealt with that kind of thing. And, you know, the monkeys weren't the only people doing it. But it was so bizarre, especially now when we look back in time. That would be like the TV show Big Time Rush doing a 9/11 episode, you know, or, you know, terrorist or something. It'd be mm-hmm. very strange.
Mm-hmm. I haven't actually done the math, but in 1971,
mm-hmm.
we had MASH. It was set in Korea.
Yeah. So it just seems like a cyclical kind of thing.
For the grown-ups, it's time to start finding the black humor in something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I was an adult. I didn't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Before the scene goes any farther, man, what is this gun thing?
Well, now, just a minute. If you gotta have the gun, after all, it's a prop.
That's horrible,
put
man.
That away.
It's bad enough that you're with a uniform.
And all the guns
gun
on television and everything?
Bad enough we have a tuning fork.
Well, let's move on to Melanie's list. Melanie, what are some of your... tropes or plot devices that you love about the monkeys?
Well, I sort of looked at it from the point of view of trying to build a single perfect episode.
Ah.
And I tried to think of five things that would make an episode a perfect episode for me. Ironically, the first thing on my list is the first thing that was on your list, I think. The monkeys helping somebody.
Ah.
I would prefer to have that than the monkeys get out of danger on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Something like monkeys in a ghost town where they're all by themselves and they're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Or the monkeys get their feelings hurt kind of episode like Monkeys at the Movies or Monkeys a la Mode. So that's my first. What do you think, Ken?
That's a good one. I like it. I like it very much.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, you chose it, too.
Yeah. Great, great minds think alike, even you and me.
Well, how do you explain the other four items, then? My next item on my list is that the perfect episode would have to have all four monkeys in it and involved in the plot. There are a handful of episodes that are down a monkey, and even some others where, even though they're all there, it really just focuses on one of them, and the others are kind of barely involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my standards, is you've got to have everybody on board and everybody doing things.
That is weird. And you know, we mentioned it's the monkeys race again. It seemed like Mickey showed up late on the set or something. You know, I remember...
That's a good example.
Yeah, I was sitting there going, well, where's Mickey? And then there's, when you first see him, it's almost like they filmed him separately and added him in. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of bizarre. Anytime you don't see all four of them, it's kind of bizarre. And unless, of course, you know, like, Peter's kidnapped across town and they're going to go save him and they put on monkey men suits. That's different, but, yeah.
Well, it's different, but, you know, it's also irritating. I don't know why that happened so many times, but there were a lot of episodes where Peter was either frozen or rendered incapacitated by one means or another. And that did happen a lot.
Yeah, it did.
Noticeably mm-hmm. so. Mm-hmm. Megan, what about you?
What's my favorite?
No, do you have any thoughts on the
all four monkeys at one time?
Yeah. Oh, you know, I'm totally with you on that. I think I do love the episode. I think it's 99 Pound Weakling when they keep saying, "I wish Mike were here," because you know it points out that he's not there, and it points out what his role really is in the four mm-hmm. of them, which is, you know, they would look to him to help get them out of this situation with Mickey and all that. So that one I give a pass, but I agree. I think a show just needs that chemistry of the four of them being there and being involved.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Peter.
Hey Peter.
What's happening, Mr. Peter?
Well, he's probably not back from his dream yet.
Possible, man. Peter doesn't dream.
Oh, well, in that case, he's gone.
He's gone!
Peter, he's gone!
Melanie, your next one?
Number three, now this shouldn't be a surprise, monkey magic.
Ah.
It's got to have magic in it. Somebody's got to conjure something. We have to have a shared imagination sequence. Something magical has to happen.
Yep, love it.
I'm going to like go out on a limb because of who I'm talking to here, but I think it's interesting sometimes when the monkeys meet someone that is also capable of doing monkey magic,
mm-hmm.
and they almost get miffed sometimes. It's like, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Give an example, Ken.
Well, I think it was in the, again, Monkeys Race Again. One of those German dudes was able to conjure something right up, and it really flustered the three monkeys that were there.
The one I think of is in Card Carrying Red Shoes.
Ah, yes.
When Natasha conjures up a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right.
She's pointing her finger at them, and mm-hmm. they tease her about the fact that, you know, you're threatening us with your finger, and boom, she's got a gun in her hand.
Well, she's just kind of badass all around. Oh, sorry.
No, badass
she's
is
awesome
fine.
All around.
You know, some people are badass, other people just have badasses. But it all works out in the long run. You know.
She has an excellent ass, but
there
she
you
is
go.
Badass.
Excellent. Your next plot point, Melanie?
This is very important to me, and it is the one thing that just makes me tear my hair out at the end of the second season. The story has to have an ending.
Mm.
It has to end. There are so many episodes, mostly in the second season, that don't have endings. They get to a point where all the characters are in one room and there's maximum danger, the music starts, everyone runs around and acts silly, and then the episode ends. And you don't know what happened.
Or why it ended. It's right. Well, obviously, the clock on the wall says it's over, so there you go, folks.
Sometimes there'll be a little tag sequence where they'll go, well, I guess we're okay now. And it's like, well, how in the hell did that happen?
Not to put you on the spot, but which is a time that you remember that specifically?
Monstrous Monkey Mash.
Ah,
they
great
have
example.
This really bizarre, silly, funny romp set to, I think it's Going Down.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end of the romp, all of a sudden they're outside running around in the bright sunshine. It's mm-hmm. clips from that jumping over the fountain sequence.
Yes.
And then when it's over, they're all sitting together in the library and somebody says something like, well, according to this book, once you defeat the mummy and the wolf man and the Dracula and, you know, then that's all the monsters there are. And so I guess we won. And then they talk about Peter's wristwatch and the book right. starts floating and the realm
they
of credits.
Cut the wires.
And it's like, yeah, there's no indication of exactly what happened to cause the monsters to be defeated.
Excellent
it's
point.
It's so true.
Excellent point. And your fifth point or topic?
My fifth topic I call the X Factor. And this is not something that I can say what it would be because that's the whole point. It's something different every time. Something that's totally unexpected and unique. Some of the examples I came up with are the Frogman and Reuben the Tadpole sequence in Captain Crocodile. The blooper of the Save the Texas Prairie Chicken. The moment in one of the first season episodes where Mickey stalks right off the set and goes to talk to the writers. There's a serious interview where they actually talk about the Sunset Strip riots, and there's no jokes at all. It's a very serious talk. Pat Paulson being in Monkeys Watch Their Feet. Frank Zappa appearing on the show. All of these were each individually a totally unique thing that sparkled and stood out and had nothing to do with anything else in any other episode.
Those are really great examples.
Somebody did their homework. And speaking of another somebody doing their homework, the lovely and talented Megan Stemwave, would you run down your top five tropes or plot devices?
Sure. I think it might be more like three, if
that
that's
works.
Okay. But I share one with you, Ken, for sure, and that is a spooky, monster-esque kind of plot, mm-hmm. you know? I really enjoy those. Being a horror fan, you know, when I can see the monkeys cross over into the genre I love so much. I mean, that's just perfect for me.
You know, if they were around today, that it would be a Walking Dead versus the monkeys.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, you know, The Devil and Peter Tork fits in that category, too.
Yes,
yeah.
It does.
Yeah,
yes,
a little
does.
Bit. And of course, the scariest thing being that you can't say hell on television.
So that's what it's all about.
Yeah. It's pretty scary.
You know what's even more scary?
What?
You can't say on television.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Gosh, now I really want to see them meet someone like Daryl Dixon.
You know? I don't want to see that.
Oh, I'd love to see that. Just all these people taking it all so seriously, and they just walk through the zombies like, hey, we need to, you know, is this the part in the script where I'm supposed to be afraid? And then they come back and go, ah! You know, I can just see them doing that. Anyhow, your next bit?
My next bit would be agreeing with Melanie that I need to have all four of them there, like I was saying earlier. I think that makes a perfect episode. And they're all there and they're all involved. Something like Alias Mickey Dolenz, which is missing Davey, I believe. I just spend the whole episode like, where is he? And what would he be doing if he were here? It's just distracting to me. Mm-hmm. Without some mention or, you know, working that into the plot somehow. I think it just leaves it wanting a little bit.
Agreed 100%.
Yeah. Actually, Alias Mickey Dolenz is unusual in that not only was Davey missing, but Peter was barely in the episode at all.
That's
and
true.
Mike was in the episode a little bit, but not much. It mm-hmm. really is the closest thing they have to a solo episode. It's almost all Mickey all the time.
Yeah, it really is. It's the Mickey show.
Yeah.
Although it has one of my favorite recurring gag moments ever, which is Mike blowing up I think it's the piano instead of the safe.
Yeah.
It cracks me up.
Yeah, that's a wonderful scene. But mm-hmm. I had read in Andrew Sandoval's book that episode was filmed right before Christmas.
Mm.
And we know that Davey went home.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that they gave a concert on December 26th. So I suspect that they made that a Mickey-centric episode so that everybody could get home and visit their families.
That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I remember reading that as well. Wow.
Yeah, there's actually a teen magazine where the reporter talked about the fact that Mickey was the only person left right before Christmas.
Yeah.
The last monkey.
Well, his family was close by, so he didn't have as far to travel.
Excellent. Okay, Megan, your next point?
My next is a really good guest star. It doesn't even have to be somebody as completely awesome and famous as Rosemary or everyone's favorite Monty Landis, but I think a really interesting bit player brings so much more to the show, brings a whole different kind of chemistry. Julie Newmar, she's amazing in her episode. Mm-hmm. I really love the guy who plays, I guess, Count Dracula in the Monstrous Monkey Mash. I find him really funny. So I've always really enjoyed all those bit players who come in and kind of sparkle the place up.
He doesn't really vampire up well.
He doesn't, but I love it. I mean, it sort of fits.
He's almost like, can you believe I have to do this?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I love the scene where he says, here we are in my beautiful underground lair with a beautiful fake backdrop.
Yes. Well, that is perfect that you say that, because that leads me into my fourth and probably last point, which is breaking the fourth wall. And I think that you know, some of the things that you mentioned earlier, Melanie, as your X Factor items kind of fall with this too, like when Mickey walks off the set to go talk to the writers, anytime they talk to the camera, any of the little visual asides when some words are put on the screen, you know, pointing out that in fact we're watching a show, that as a young person and certainly as an old person now, that always makes me laugh, and I find it so innovative.
I love those moments.
Same here. Well, let's talk about a favorite character that we have that had more life in them. And I know, Melanie, you and I, we kind of discussed this a little bit off the air. You have a bit of a problem with this concept, but I'm thinking that there were characters that could have returned because they had a little bit more juice or life in them. Like, for example, mine would have been Mr. Zero, played by Monty Landis. I think that they could have used that same character somehow, some way, in a third season and just had another storyline with it. It would have been cool to see him try and come back and get them again somehow. What's your problem with the premise?
You have put me on the spot.
Yes.
Okay. Let Megan put hers in first. And then I'll tell you what I think is wrong with the premise.
Okay. All right. Well, go for it.
Gosh. You know, I'm not sure that I can really... I don't know. Millie, maybe. Rosemary. Mm. I keep talking about her, but I love her so much. I think it would have been interesting if she popped back in. Like in Monkey Mayor, they have all these neighbors, these kind of older people, mm-hmm. you know? And Millie's supposed to be down the street, so it would have been nice to see her kind of come in and talk a little bit, but, you know, I'm sure it wasn't easy to get Rosemary to come back. But.
Right.
Except she did do two episodes.
Well, that's true. Mention, she did, didn't she?
You know, a great plot for that would have been she starts a boys' home or something, and she asks the boys' help to get it set up, and they perform a concert to help raise money, and, you know, to me, that could have been an episode.
Interesting thought.
Actually, Megan, I like the thought of Millie, because... Technically speaking, at the end of that episode, that pad was still rented to her.
Mm.
She moved out, but she is now the person whose name is on the lease. So mm-hmm. theoretically, she is now their landlady, which may explain why we never saw Babbitt again.
Oh, wow. That's true.
Mind blowing.
But that brings me to... I studied the characters when I was working on my book, because I wanted to see how many female and male characters there were, and so I counted them. And in the process of doing that, something hit me, which is that other than Mr. Babbitt, no character ever comes back mm-hmm. in this entire series. And that's true what you said, Megan, about, you know, you'd expect the neighbors to be the same neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But even the case of the neighbors, they had different neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what I proposed in my book was that by never having a character return, the monkeys are seen to be isolated. They have no outside friends. They have no steady girlfriends. They have no family that they can call on. You know, they never are able to borrow some money from, you know, somebody, or mm-hmm. ask somebody for a job or get help, or, you know, we're out of gas, call a friend. You know, even mm-hmm. the other bands that we see in the audition, we only see them that one time and mm-hmm. never again. So there's no support system around them.
Heck, they can't even figure out how the pad is actually laid out. Because there's sometimes their bedrooms are on the first floor, sometimes they're on the second floor, sometimes one's upstairs, one's downstairs. And
there's one bedroom on the first floor, one bedroom on the second floor, and for some reason in the second season they all live on the second floor. Mm-hmm. Maybe they left Millie's bedroom set up for Millie.
Could be.
I don't know.
I just
but
argue
my point
that
is, I would not break that. I mean, other than Mr. Babbitt, who did appear in four episodes early on, I would not change that tradition. I would keep it. Once a character is in the episode, they do not come back.
I would argue that once that somebody saw Help and how the Beatles were all sleeping in that one big room, that that was a good reason to have the monkeys do that. I can see where you're coming from, but I could see where Millie coming back and doing that would be cool. Or just Monty Landis's Mr. Zero. Gosh, so much that could have been done. But I defer to your wisdom, but I also indulge in my folly. So there we go.
Folly away.
Do you feel that if there would have been a third season that we would have seen the monkeys direct more?
I thought a long and hard about this question, and I think that if there were a third season, we would not have seen them direct in the second season.
Mm.
Because I think, now this is pure speculation on me, I have no inside knowledge, but I think that if they were seriously trying to get renewed for a third season, they would have been focused a lot harder on putting out the best product they could possibly put out at the end of the shooting in 1967. And the fact that they turned the reins over to Peter and Mickey during the winter of 1967, I mean, Peter was 25, Mickey was 22.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both high as kites. And as much as I love these two guys, those are not, in my opinion, stellar standout episodes. I think they are a sign of a little bit of that self-indulgent nature that was going on.
Well, they were trying to pacify the guys on one hand. On the other hand, I think that the producers were looking at, we can take this into the movies, or, you know, we have to change what we're doing. So they mm-hmm. were in a place where they couldn't lose.
Oh, they were already working on Head.
Right.
When Mickey and Peter were directing Head, the script for Head was already underway.
Right.
I'll have to double check my dates on that, but I'm pretty certain I'm standing on firm ground here.
Mm-hmm.
But by doing that, I mean, it made it so that they, you know, they couldn't lose. Unfortunately, NBC decided to dump them anyway, you know.
Yeah. I also note that on the commentary track that Peter does for Monkeys Mind Their Manor,
mm-hmm.
he mentions a couple of times, maybe even three times, instances where his co-stars were being giving him back talk or being insubordinate while he was trying to direct.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sense that this was not exactly a successful experiment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey may have had much more luck at it. Of course, he'd also had a much longer career working in television. Mm-hmm. He'd also co-written the episode as well as directed it. But
Mickey had a better grasp of the shorthand of the situation, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that Mickey's episode was more innovative and funny.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is kind of rough around the edges. It has an unfinished look to it, to me.
Mm. Yeah.
The sets were just basically, they were filming on the backside of their own soundstage. Peter's episode is more polished, but it's not really very exciting. It's very kind of dull and conventional.
Yeah.
And there's just not particularly good episodes. And I think if they were trying to get renewed, instead of trying to find the exit, I think they probably would have had Jim Frawley do two more, or brought back some of their other directors to do two more, rather than having their marijuana-using rock and roll stars.
Huh. Megan, any thoughts?
Well, my first reaction to your question was that it would depend on how stoned Mickey was, you know, through season three. So I pretty much concur with everything Melanie was saying. I think it's such an interesting point that, you know, if they were really trying to get renewed. Although, you know, I will say that I think Monkeys Mind Their Manner is a fine episode that, you know, holds up with a lot of the season two episodes. I don't know. I just wanted to defend Peter there for a minute.
It's much better than that crap fest I was mentioning earlier, the Monkeys Race Again or whatever.
Absolutely.
It is.
And James Frawley directed that one, so there you go.
Was he asleep? Was he asleep while they were filming? Is that how that worked?
That was the very last one. That was the last episode they made.
Yikes. Well, you can tell.
Whether he was asleep or not, I can't say.
Well, it seemed like they wanted to get their use out of the car more than anything. It's like, hey, we've got a few models we need to sell. We've got to use this car as much as we can.
Exactly.
Because it's almost the star of the show, and that says a lot, you know. Whereas the Batmobile might have been the star of the Batman TV show at times. It was fun. As much as I love the Monkeys Mobile, it can't carry a show by itself. That I think, is now my official least favorite Monkeys episode. I've said it.
Well said. Well said.
I guess while we're here, Melanie, what's your least favorite Monkeys episode?
Well, it's Monkeys Race Again. Absolutely.
Again,
it's just,
even...
It's horrible on every level.
Great minds think alike, even you and I. Megan?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything good to say about that episode either. It's not one that I, you know, jump to rewatch at any time. And I can't think of anything that I like less. So, sure, I'll vote for that one too.
Well, you know, it's strange. Every once in a while, I don't watch it and I forget. I have to forget it again in order to watch it.
Right.
Because it's like, there's no way I'm putting myself through that hell. But, you know, hey, it's still the Monkees. There's parts of it that are okay, but not much of it.
I find A Nice Place to Visit kind of hard to watch. Maybe because of the sort of racial stereotyping silliness in that one or something, or I don't know, but I'm not crazy about that one either, so I'll give it my number two slot.
And which one is that?
That's the one when the guys end up, their car breaks down in Mexico or somewhere near Mexico.
Yeah.
It's and Mexico. Of course, Davey falls in love with Angelina and so forth.
Just for love, my baby, I went down to Mexico. Thinking when I hear
kind of having a conversation offline about this, but we've talked about how the monkey's formula kind of has worked throughout entertainment history, and we're going to basically be talking about film and television. And if you look at the monkeys, you can see that they were, in a sense, you know, doing the Beatles thing, like where there's one guy who's like kind of really goofy and one guy who's really sweet and one guy who's kind of like the boss and one that's really good looking and all that. And if you go back and look at the Marx Brothers, it's kind of like the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Like which of the Marx Brothers do you think, you know, would be who, you know, like if you were to pick, who's Harpo in the monkeys?
Peter.
I would have to say so, yeah. Because he didn't get to sing on album very much, so take that, Don Kirshner. Anyway.
If that's your reasoning, why?
No.
But, because he didn't sing much.
Yeah.
Because he once played the harp.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. See, it works. It works. So you could see the Marx Brothers, or the monkeys dressed as the Marx Brothers with no problem. And,
well, and you literally can. Yeah,
absolutely.
In the monkey's paw.
Yeah, absolutely. Even in The Wizard of Oz, which I would have loved to see them in a third season done a lampoon similar to Fairy Tale, where the monkeys would have been The Wizard of Oz, where they would have done The Wizard of Oz, and you could have either had Monty Landis, or who's the fellow that played the Wizard Glick?
Rip Taylor, crazy it's, man.
But Rip Taylor could have been a cool Wizard of Oz.
Who rang that bell?
Of course, we've seen Davy in drag, you know, during, what is it, Fairy Tale? Yeah. He could have been Dorothy, and I think Mickey would have been a great Cowardly Lion. And I think Mike Tin Man, would you say?
I was just thinking that, a cranky Tin Man.
There you
yes.
go. And here I go, I gotta oil myself up again. I'm covered in oil, and I just don't, and you got straw all over me, and I could just hear him doing that sort of thing. And and of course that would leave Mickey as the scarecrow.
Mickey was the lion. That leaves Peter.
Oh, well, there you go. Yes, which would make sense because Peter's character was the not so smart one, so
needs the brains.
Yes. There you go. So doesn't that seem like that would have been a natural fit?
If you're going to do that kind of a spoof, then that would be the lineup. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You just said so much, Melanie, without saying anything.
But I think it would have been a great episode. I mean, look at how good Fairy Tale turned out.
Yeah. But Fairy Tale was a standalone. I mean, it's kind of like what I talked about earlier, the X Factor. You know, that surprise thing that you only do once. I'm not sure it would have worked to do a similar thing, although obviously The Wizard of Oz is not the same thing as Fairy Tale. I mean, think about Carol Burnett doing
Gone with
the
Wind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That was a terrific spoof, but it was not just Carol Burnett and her cast doing Gone with the Wind. It was Carol Burnett and her cast doing a really bizarre, funny takeoff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to come up with something to make it not just here are the four monkeys acting out Gone with the Wind.
So
Wizard of Oz or anything. Sound of Music. I don't know.
So going back to your list of things that you need, the five things you'd need for a monkeys episode, I guess number six would be really great writers.
Oh, yeah. I think they had really great writers.
Yeah.
And I think that Fairy Tale is an amazing, amazing episode.
Mm-hmm.
But
plus, we get to hear Mike say this.
Oh, my very favorite, leftovers. Mm.
'Tis time we were away.
Hold it just a minute, Buster.
And this.
Hey, man, what a groovy looking chick with a body like that. I've never seen no sign.
And this.
My lady.
Harold, you better get this carriage out of the mud.
'Tis stuck very deep, my lady. 'Twill be a time before we can leave this place again.
Oh, 'twill it now. Well, if you don't get me out of this filthy little village in 10 minutes, I'm not going to marry you. What do you think of that?
Wow, what a bummer.
Was there any particular songs that you wish that you would have seen performance pieces for as opposed to romps? Anything that stands out for either of you? Megan, we'll start with you.
Oh, my gosh. I would have loved to have seen Listen to the Band on the show in one form or another. I know we got it in 33 and a third, but
that's so hard to watch, though.
It's kind of hard to watch. Without Mickey's commentary, it's really hard to watch.
It's hard to watch no matter what.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. So, you know, that's a favorite of mine from sort of the later catalog.
As far as I'm concerned, the most important thing is that the song's got to be integrated fully into the episode. Mm-hmm. I like to see either a plot-related performance when they're actually performing because the plot calls for them to be performing.
Mm-hmm.
Or a narrative romp where the romp is actually moving the plot forward. It's actually causing things to happen that are necessary for the plot to really to reach what I mentioned earlier, an ending,
right.
And not just random goofing off. And I also like for a song to be related thematically to what they're doing. A good example is in Hillbilly Honeymoon, they reached all the way back to the first album to grab Papa Jean's Blues. Even though that wasn't a current release, it was a year old at that point, but mm-hmm. It was the perfect song for that situation. One of the things that makes me cringe is in the Pirates episode, Hitting the High Seas,
mm-hmm.
the fight between the monkeys and the pirate crew.
Mm.
Remember which song it was?
Daydream Believer.
Daydream Believer!
Why would you put that there?
I mean, it's a beautiful song, but no, not in a fight scene.
Right.
Right in the middle of Daydream Believer, we actually see Peter run a pirate through with a sword. The only documented homicide by a monkey.
Wow. You're really
well, we don't
into
know
this.
For sure that he died, I suppose. So, you know.
Yeah, it looked like a pretty fatal wound to me.
Wow.
Even though the sword really just went through the guy's, but you know, under his arm, but still.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It was meant to look like a fatal wound. But anyway, the point is,
so
you don't
agree
use
with you.
You don't use Daydream Believer for a fight scene.
No.
Right.
Wow. What a trip.
I agree with you, Melanie. I love a good narrative romp, a good plot-related romp, I think really, really makes the show shine. Like in The Chaperone, I think that's one of the best
romps. Getting ready for the party?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, you guys are right. Daydream Believer used for that was completely, like, totally messed up.
I think it was Love Is Only Sleeping was used for a fight scene, too. That was the second worst, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre.
Is Daydream Believer in Monkeys Marooned? It seems like it's placed oddly in that one, too.
It is, but it's right at the very end of the episode after the bad guy's been defeated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's
basically, Monty Landis just falls over into a chair. Somebody hit him over the head and he falls into a chair, and that's the last we see of him. And then everyone just plays. It's a very playful romp, so I'll forgive that one, especially since Kim has just been reunited with his co-star, Jane.
Fair enough.
Makes sense. You know, we're discussing about how the Monkeys formula followed that for people. I remember speaking to Coco and both Val Carey's not too long ago. They both mentioned the Big Bang Theory, that in a sense it's similar to what the Monkeys were, and how you had one guy who was really goofy and one guy who was like this and one guy who was like that. Do you guys see any other types of that archetype, if you will, in popular culture? Megan, any ideas?
Sure. I'm not that familiar with the Big Bang Theory, but I believe that is certainly true, because I do think it repeats a lot. I'm thinking of a few sitcoms that I know, like The Golden Girls has four people, and they have very distinct personalities.
You just blew my mind again. The Monkees as the Golden Girls.
Think about it. It's totally, they line right up. There's, right, who kind of not as smart one. There's the really funny, sarcastic one. There's the sexy one, and so on. Sex and the City has a similar structure. Designing Women, these are all women sitcoms. I guess I'm showing you what I like to watch. But, I think it's something that repeats quite a lot in the sitcom world.
Okay, let's go back to the Golden Girls again.
Okay.
You've got to walk me through this. Who's who? Okay. Because we have done this in the Kiss world, where each one of the... we even have a t-shirt for the podcast called Mod of Thunder.
Oh, you do not.
We do. I'll show it to you right now.
Do you know how I feel about B. Arthur? Okay, we can talk about this later.
You love B. Arthur. You love B. Arthur.
Yes, okay.
But, so who would be who?
Well, an easy one is, Peter would be Rose, Betty White.
Oh my God, you're right.
See? Yeah, Davey would be Blanche. Because, she gets all the action. I think Mike would be Dorothy. And I guess that leaves...
I'm Mickey sitting here and Sophia. Thinking you've laid such a trap for yourself.
So Mickey would be Sophia, huh?
I think so.
Wow.
Because she's the one who's always got the one-liners and,
Yeah, but I could almost see Mike doing Sophia. Because there's he is cranky. Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe.
I mean, even when I was doing my imitation of Mike as the Tin Man, he was like, here I am, I have to get all oiled up again, and, all that stuff.
But he's also more of the sensible one, and so is Dorothy. She's the one who, in crisis, she kind of pulls everybody together. So that's kind of what I was thinking.
What we need is an internet meme of Dorothy looking at the camera going, don't do that.
Yes, we do. There needs to be a lot more memes involving B. Arthur, as far as I'm concerned.
Very nice.
This is what Gene Simmons looked like on the Asylum tour. That's his. That's his hair. That's his outfit. And we just put Dorothy's face on it, because everybody says on that tour they looked like the Golden Girls. This is an actual shirt. We've sold four of them now.
I think maybe you're going to sell five.
Well, there you go. The Mod of Thunder. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Gene Simmons as Dorothy.
Wow.
But, yeah, you nailed it right on the head with the Golden Girls and the Monkees thing. Wow, wow, wow.
Blew your mind, huh, Ken?
Yep, absolutely. Well... So, what would you have liked to seen in a third season? We'll start with Melanie.
I know that they wanted to go more into a variety type show with the guests.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't think that was such a good idea. I would have preferred that they stay with a half hour plotted episodes. Try to keep some of that self-referential wit, but tidy up, you know, be a little bit tighter, a little bit smarter, a little more organized, a little bit less self-indulgent.
That works for me. Megan, do you have any thoughts along those lines? What would you have liked to have seen?
I'm not sure anything ever goes well when you try to change a format into a variety show format. I think the Brady Bunch is a really good example of that.
Yeah, that is a great idea. Yeah.
I mean, I sort of love their variety hour in a I can't believe what I'm seeing kind of way, but I would have hated to see the Monkees go that way. I mean, I think 33 and a third is, you know, kind of our prototype for some of that, and it's not pretty, you know. So,
Who are you?
I am Mickey Dolenz.
Wrong, you are Monkey Number One.
No,
I am Monkey Number One.
Who are you?
I am Peter Tork.
Wrong, you are Monkey Number Two.
No, I am Monkey Number Two.
Who are you?
I am Michael Nesmith.
Wrong, you are Monkey Number Three.
No, I am Monkey Number Three.
Who are you?
David Jones.
Wrong, you are Monkey Number Four.
No, I am Monkey Number Four.
Good, very good. Now let us...
I think it would have been interesting to see them do some different plots, maybe with more revolving characters. Sorry, Melanie. Or just expand their universe a little bit more. Go on location more, I think would have been really cool.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
So
I would have loved to see more Monkey Men myself.
Yeah.
Anytime I can see them in those costumes.
This looks like a job for... Monkey Men! Up and away!
Do you think they actually had four of those costumes? Because we never actually saw all four of them in use at the same time.
Well, I gotta figure that Davies was just for him, right?
Well, yeah.
That would have been hilarious, you know. But I wonder.
You know, I have to say, too, that when you think about what's happening in the world at this point, you're getting into 1968, things are really getting crazy, you know.
Yeah.
And we lose a couple of really, really important political figures in that year. There's, the space race is really heating up. And it's hard to imagine the show kind of continuing on with sort of that first season sensibility of your kind of standard sitcom. You know, there's trouble and the boys have to get out of trouble. It's, you know, something would have had to change. And I think that we see season two trying to stretch to kind of reach what's going on. It's hard to see what they could have done in 68, 69 if they'd stayed together.
Right.
Good point.
I agree with that.
Getting back to what we said about variety shows, it is something that we need to keep in mind that looking back from where we are now, we tend to see the variety show as being something that's kind of hokey.
Mm-hmm.
But in the late 60s and early 70s, the variety show was king.
That's right. True.
Yeah, if they could have converted to a variety show, they would have been riding the in wave of the era.
That's true. In fact, they would have been maybe slightly ahead, you know, because I think it really took off in the mid-70s with like Sonny and Cher and Donnie and Marie.
Well, the only problem or one of the obstructions that I could see is that if they're on TV and the record company is trying to sell Monkey Records, and they're having other record companies' acts on, I could see where that could be a problem.
Yeah, the business complicated.
Model. Yeah. So if they could overcome that, it would have been so cool. Could you just imagine Peter Tork and Davy Jones introducing the Doors? That would have been so cool. But, you know, I would have loved to have seen them, like I said earlier, fighting zombies, but who knew we'd all be so enamored with zombies.
Well, Night of the Living Dead, you know, is it comes out in 1968.
Exactly. So it was real starting. Close there. But so they were just a little ahead of that curve. But I would have...
They couldn't even find a pair of fangs for Davy to wear.
I know.
It's supposed to be Dracula.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, but they not up to that task.
I would have loved to have seen them do a takeoff of Star Trek. I thought that would have been cool.
No, Star Trek was not spoofable yet.
Yeah.
Star Trek was still too straight-laced and uptight. And
even though Laffin did some stuff with them, but, you know.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I just would have loved to have seen more Monkees. But then again, if it was going to turn out like Monkees Race Again, I could see where that maybe needed to wind up right where it did.
But again, I think that that was because they'd already decided that the show was going to end. Mm-hmm. If they really were trying to get renewed, they would have been putting out top quality.
I wonder if the general public knows that TV shows like ours never die, that they just go on and on, even though they're not being broadcast.
So I'm going to push for my top five wish things. And the first one would be The Wizard of Oz, the monkeys doing The Wizard of Oz with Wizard Glick as Wizard of Oz. And I would like to have had them run into the anti-monkey men, the wonkies. And they would wear all black and have goatees, you know, kind of.
And
like
W's on their
shirts. W's instead of M's. That would have been so cool. And of course the Star Trek thing, like I mentioned, and just any time to have fun and monkey around. So that's my goofiness. And who knows, if they would have stuck around, they could have actually been the Golden Girls.
I think that's called a lizard sunning itself on a rock.
Yep.
I think so.
They are very similar in a way when you think about it. So, monkeys, Golden Girls, Marx Brothers, Beatles, however this works out, whatever you enjoy, let us know what you think about our fun monkeying around conversation. And I'd like to thank the lovely ladies that showed up tonight. Melanie, thank you once again for being part of Zilch. And as always, she has an excellent book, and the name of it is...
Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. Thank you for the plug.
Anytime, plug away. Megan, is there anything you'd like to plug away?
No, just thanks for having me, Ken.
Well, in lieu of that, I'm going to say go buy one of Jamie Hitchcock's cool monkey-related shirts. Check our show notes for that. So there you go. How's that for a plug?
Nice.
Megan,
maybe you can include a link to Megan's wonderful mashup video.
Yes,
in the show notes.
You can see that at my blog, SiameseMeg.com.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And it's so good to have you on this episode. I look forward to every opportunity to get you guys on the show. And there's just so many cool monkey friends that we all have. And we love you all. And everybody that's not yet been on the show, give us time. We're still young and learning how to walk. So, or strut. I'd like to strut. So
I think
we need to learn how to monkey walk.
That's right.
Bloom. Here we go.
Here we go.
Walking down the street. Come on, Megan. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Bye.
Good move, Megan.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit monkeys audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the monkeys or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Bird. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.